It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we'll take a look at the rich history of Iranian films with the coordinator of the first ever Wisconsin Iranian Film Festival.
First, it's time for our weekly look at the top stories in national news, from President Trump's visit here to Wisconsin yesterday to the end of Bill O'Reilly's career at Fox News. It's been a busy week in national politics.
Craig Gilbert joins us now. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to Central Time.
Nice to be with you.
Well, let's start with this breaking Bill O'Reilly news. He's been forced out of his position at Fox News, kind of the epicenter of national conservative news on television. Can you talk a little bit about what led up to his dismissal today?
Well, mounting allegations about sexual harassment and more and more reports of settlements involving charges of sexual harassment just created enough momentum and enough concern at Fox News to move them to, in the end, terminate Bill O'Reilly's tenure, a very, very successful tenure. He was the top host on cable news, and now he follows Megyn Kelly, another one-time huge Fox star, out the door. So it means a lot of changes for Fox News. I think in some ways you could have imagined Bill O'Reilly's audience sticking by him, but advertisers were leaving the show, and also reportedly there was kind of an uproar among employees and staff at Fox News, particularly women at the network, about the prospects of letting this stand. And all of those things, I think, contributed to the decision.
You mentioned Megyn Kelly leaving as well. Now Bill O'Reilly. How big a blow is this to the Fox News brand?
Well, we'll find out whether, you know, Fox News can keep delivering the same audience. It's been a pretty reliable audience without these big stars. They've already announced, I think, that Tucker Carlson is going to replace Bill O'Reilly. You know, it may be that Fox News is the kind of franchise that is almost like, you know, that guarantees an audience depending on what your time slot is at the network. But obviously, Bill O'Reilly was hugely successful for them, and was a huge hit with their viewers. So there's no guarantee that they can kind of replicate what he was bringing them. I think Fox News, I don't think anybody questions that Fox News is going to continue to be a revenue machine. But these things, you know, fluctuate. They fluctuate with the personnel. They also fluctuate with the political cycles.
We're talking with Craig Gilbert right now from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, taking stock of the top news in national politics. And speaking of politics, Craig, a House race in Georgia had a lot of drama this week.
It really did. And, you know, there's a lot of debate over how to interpret this outcome. This is a House seat that was opened up when President Trump selected Tom Price, the former congressman, a Republican, to be his health secretary. I mean, it's a really interesting district because President Obama lost the district by more than 20 points in the 2012 election. You would think that this is a super Republican district based on that, but Hillary Clinton only lost it by a couple of points. It's a very educated district, particularly for a Republican seat. And that worked against Donald Trump. As you remember, there was kind of an education divide in this election, and people, college-educated voters, tended to be less supportive of Donald Trump than voters that didn't have a college degree. And so this is the kind of district where Democrats really, you know, do need to make inroads if they have any prayer of taking back the House. And even though they didn't win, they came very close. The rules in Georgia are that if you get 50%, you're in. But if you fall short of 50%, then the top two candidates will be in a runoff. And so it was kind of a bullet dodged for the Republicans, because now they'll have a Republican candidate in the runoff, and they hope that they can sort of circle the wagons and marshal their support for this one candidate in a district that has a long history of voting Republican for Congress. On the other hand, it's a pretty sobering sign that Democrats came that close to winning, and it's gonna command a lot of attention and a lot of money over the next couple of months. But again, when you add that to some other special elections we've seen, there's certainly some cause for concern on the part of Republicans about, you know, what the midterms are going to be like, midterms that typically in the long history of American politics swing against the party in the White House.
Well, and President Trump got involved tweeting against Ossoff in the few days leading up to that election. Did that make a difference?
It's there's no way of knowing whether it, you know, prevented him from reaching 50% or whether it boosted him and as a result he came closer to 50% than he otherwise would have. I mean, the polling in the run-up to the election did not have him reaching 50%, so it's hard to argue that made a difference. Also, if you look at the fact that the Republican candidates that were most supportive of Trump in this crowded field of candidates didn't do very well. I mean, the Republican candidate that did the best among the Republicans and as a result is going into the runoff was not a huge vocal Trump supporter. So it's going to be really interesting to watch, you know, what the Republicans have to say about Donald Trump, not only in this race, but also just going forward as we head into the midterm cycle, how they're going to handle, you know, we don't know what President Trump's standing is going to be in 2018, but if it's anything like it is now and his numbers are negative and underwater, then you're probably going to see a lot of district-by-district decisions being made by Republican candidates and Republican incumbents about how supportive they are of President Trump's agenda.
And we've got a clip of John Ossoff speaking to supporters last night. Here it is.
We will be ready to fight on and win in June if it is necessary. And there is no amount of dark money, super PAC, negative advertising that can overcome real grassroots energy like this. So bring it on. Because we are courageous. We are humble. And we know how to fight.
And of course, it turns out it is necessary to fight on to June. And Democrats also lost a special House election, Craig, in Kansas last week. I mean, are these considered big blows for Democrats? Democrats who might have wanted the narrative, look at how much momentum we have going.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. If you look at it in terms of the individual results of these districts, I mean, the Kansas district was probably a bridge too far. This was a district just based on how close they came in Georgia. Maybe a lost opportunity. Doesn't mean they can't come back and win it in June. But, you know, if the discussion is what do they tell us about the midterms, then they do tell us that Democrats have some reason for hope. And when you combine that with what typically happens in midterms, which is that the out party does really well, then I think any way you slice it, Republicans, you know, are going to have, you know, reason for concern going into this cycle. You know, it's interesting. Some Republicans are crediting Paul Ryan's PAC with helping sort of save the day in Georgia in terms of keeping the Democratic candidate from hitting that 50%, a kind of an infusion of late money. Paul Ryan has seen his polling numbers decline and just suffered a big defeat in the failure to get a health care bill passed. But one area where he has continued to kind of max out in terms and, you know, perform at a maximum level as House Speaker is fundraising for his party. He did it last fall, and, you know, as long as he remains Speaker, he's probably going to be bringing a lot of resources to bear in these individual races that are going to be really important to Republicans.
We're talking with Craig Gilbert right now, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the biggest national political stories of the week.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you think of these races, these special elections, a lot of national attention. Do you see tea leaves that we need to read in the outcomes we've seen so far? Also, what's your reaction to the news that Bill O'Reilly, as of today, is out at Fox after sexual harassment allegations and settlements? And tell us what you think of the upcoming House tax reform hearings and President Trump's visit to us here in Wisconsin.
Right now, we're taking a look at the biggest stories in national politics this week. Craig Gilbert is with us. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to some of the news stories of the week. Bill O'Reilly out at Fox. President Trump visiting us here in Wisconsin. His visit to Kenosha yesterday. The politics of the special congressional elections people have been watching lately. What do you think it means, if anything, for the overall race for Congress next year? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller. We have Charlie joining us from Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've been an avid Fox News watcher for a while, and I've always been impressed that they tend to cover stories that the mainstream media seem to ignore. An example would be the rape situation that occurred at a Maryland high school with illegal immigrants, and no other network would cover the story. However, I am worried that they are doing a no-spin, so to speak, ignoring of the Bill O'Reilly. Have they ignored the Bill O'Reilly story? Are they fair and balanced with Bill O'Reilly? And is it really a no-spin zone situation, or are they really just becoming like everybody else in the fake news business?
Charlie, thanks a lot for those questions. And Charlie, Craig is a viewer of Fox News, and he's wondering if Fox has done enough to step up and sort of own what's happening there, maybe with the culture at Fox and specifically with Bill O'Reilly.
Well, I mean, I think that's a sort of a unfolding story. I mean, certainly before Bill O'Reilly, you had Roger Ailes, the force behind, creative force behind the network, also departing the network under similar circumstances. So there is that is now part of the history of Fox News, and I don't know how they're covering it today because I haven't been watching, but I'm sure. I'm sure it'll be an interesting evening of watching.
I'm going to move on to our next story now. News broke today that House Oversight and Government Reform Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz announced that he's not going to be seeking office in 2018. How do you read this news?
Well, you know, there's a lot of speculation that he wants to run for governor in 2020. He said that's not his agenda. It's always, you know, unusual when somebody who's relatively young is walking away at a moment when he's got more power by virtue of the fact that Republicans control the House and they have unified control of the major levers of government in Washington. So that's one reason why it's kind of a surprising thing, because now this is sort of the opportunity, as Paul Ryan has said many times, that all Republicans have been waiting for, and he's got a powerful committee. He's relatively young. Utah is typically a fairly safe state for Republicans. Whether there are personal reasons or other reasons, or he just wants to take a break, he's not shutting the door on running again after 2018, but he's apparently not going to be on the ballot in 2018.
And let's look at some national news coming closer to home. President Trump was in Kenosha yesterday. He's got a full complement of Republican stars from Wisconsin here behind him. There was Senator Ron Johnson, Governor Walker, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, all there to see President Trump speaking in Kenosha. Why did President Trump go to Kenosha? Why pick there?
Well, this was his first trip to Wisconsin since he became president. He was in Wisconsin in December after the election, but since he became president, he did have another trip trip scheduled at one point that was canceled. But, you know, Wisconsin, of course, was one of the three states that make up the so-called blue wall that he broke through. Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, states that have been typically voting Democratic for president, that delivered the presidency to him. So in that sense, it sort of made sense for him. It's a natural place for him to return to. It also happened to be not only the home state of his White House Chief of Staff, Reince Priebus, but the home county of his White House Chief of Staff, Reince Priebus, also the congressional district of Paul Ryan. Even though Paul Ryan wasn't there, Paul Ryan has been traveling in Europe. He got a shout-out from President Trump. So, an interesting kind of convergence of factors here when you consider some of the players in the White House and in Republican politics today. It was also kind of interesting that there's a perception that President Trump has kind of gotten away from some of the populist themes and issues and even positions that he campaigned on. And I think the trip to Wisconsin was sort of in that more populist spirit. It was a theme that you heard a lot more about on the campaign trail than you have since, which is, you know, workers and jobs and trade and America first and hiring and buying American. It wasn't an earth-shattering action that he took yesterday in terms of the executive orders, but in terms of the rhetoric and the themes, it was kind of more of a return to the Donald Trump that we remember from the campaign trail.
And he did get into the debate about dairy policy, the tensions going on between the United States and Canada, hitting Wisconsin in particular. How big a surprise was that?
It was a surprise to me. I mean, you know, we're used to hearing him, kind of, blast away at China and Mexico, but he spent more time talking about Canada at this event. And it is a complicated dispute involving the pricing and of milk products that are being sold to Canada from and being produced in Wisconsin. But Donald Trump kind of waded right into this. It kind of fit. It fit his broader themes about America first, and he wasn't timid about it. This is not necessarily a partisan issue. These are parochial issues when you start talking about dairy and state economic interests like this one. It was an issue that Democrats and Republican members of Congress from Wisconsin have been outspoken about, And so Trump made that. I mean, it was really kind of in some ways a centerpiece of his visit, even though it wasn't expected to be.
Craig Gilbert is with us right now talking about the top stories, national politics this week. Craig Gilbert with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Craig, yesterday the U.S. announced that Iran is compliant with a nuclear deal brokered by former President Obama. What did the Trump administration say?
Well, during the campaign, of course, President Trump was extremely critical, like many Republicans have been, of the Iran deal. But the fact of the matter is he doesn't necessarily have a lot of options now going forward when it comes to the Iran deal. It would be very difficult for a lot of reasons to try to undo it. And you even heard in this announcement that, no claims being made that Iran is violating the terms of that deal, but some language also about, kind of reviewing, to what degree it was in our interests to go there, to do this. So I think it's kind of reflective in a broader sense of some of the sort of the cold, hard reality when it comes to some of the issues that President Trump campaigned on, including foreign policy issues, which where they are very thorny and very complicated. And it's one thing to kind of, crusade during the campaign, and this is true of people in both parties. It's one thing to sort of crusade on a particular issue as a candidate. It's another thing when you take office and you're kind of confronted with the real-world consequences of doing everything you want to do on a particular issue. It's not always clear that you can follow through on your campaign rhetoric.
And the U.S. has said that Iran is still a state sponsor of terrorism. Is the investigation into the effects of the sanctions, is that, do you think, a means to put political pressure on Iran in that respect?
Yeah, it may also just be, you know, kind of a way of trying to satisfy some of your constituencies within the party who have never been happy about the deal. But whether it actually leads to a reconsideration or a change in U.S. policy is another question.
And Craig, as we start to wrap up here, last week the White House announced it was sending a naval strike group to the Korean Peninsula. This was against a backdrop of mounting tension with North Korea. And now news broke that the fleet was actually heading in the wrong direction. What went wrong?
A lot of confusion and apparently some misleading statements about what was actually going on. I mean, we're told that the carrier is, in fact, now or eventually going to be headed in that direction, but it wasn't at the time these statements were made. So a very confusing episode. I think it was confusing not only to people here, but to people in South Korea. And just kind of a strange and unsettling, note in what is a very strange and unsettling situation vis-a-vis North Korea, where you've got, you know, a country that is incredibly isolated and just kind of operating under its own, in its own domain, in ways that are very worrisome to the rest of the world. At the same time, they're responding to what they perceive as threats from other countries, particularly the U.S. And so sorting that out and also sorting out the implications for the U.S.-China relationship as President Trump is trying to put pressure on China and looking to China to sort of sort this out, and China's kind of saying, well, this is really up to the U.S. To try to stabilize the situation in North Korea. But whatever you do, you know, we don't want a war in our backyard.
And we leave it there. Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
That was Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Iranian cinema has a long and rich history, including groundbreaking films like Turtles Can Fly, Persepolis, and most recently The Salesman, which won the 2017 Academy Award for Best Foreign Film.
And now Wisconsin residents can get a taste of Iranian films at a film festival currently underway at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Hamidreza Nasiri joins us now. He's director and programmer of the first ever Wisconsin-Iranian Film Festival. He's a teaching assistant at UW-Madison. Hamidreza, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, what led you to want to start this Wisconsin-Iranian Film Festival?
This is an idea that's like I had like 4 years, especially that I saw that like how so many people in Madison are interested in Iranian cinema whenever they showed films either in Marquee or in Cinematheque. The Iranian films, like so many people were there. Like I saw that like for Close Up, the Chazen Museum was packed, or for Fireworks Wednesday and the other Iranian films too. And Madison has great cinephiles that are interested in foreign cinema, which is amazing. So I thought, why not? Why not bring Iranian films, like more of them, to Madison? And so I was playing with that idea for a few years until like this year I felt the urgency to bring them. The kind of like cultural, political urgency to have a festival of just Iranian films in Madison.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the urgency you felt? Why this year seemed the year that you wanted to act, and it was imperative that you wanted to bring this now?
Right. So without getting into so much politics, I would just say that the past few months have not been great for Iranians, especially Iranians in America. People, especially like politicians, like have said like a lot of things about us that are just not true, and some media have also like helped them in that terms. So I thought that's like why not bring truer picture of Iran and Iranian culture, something that is not mediated by other media, but they are made by like Iranian artists themselves and are about Iranian society. And especially that's like the films that we've brought to the festival, they are giving a very diverse picture of Iran, and they are not just like, oh, see, that's like how great Iran is. No, we are not trying to do that, but we are trying to show that like how life in Iran really is, how Iranian people live, what's their culture, what's their history, and those things. So that's like they get an alternative picture. I don't like to use that word anymore, but yeah, alternative picture, maybe a truer picture of Iran and its culture and society.
I'm not a huge cinephile, not a huge film fanatic. I haven't seen a lot of films from Iran, but I keep hearing from people in the know, this is an amazing film tradition going back decades. Can you talk a little bit about the Iranian filmmaking recent history?
Right. So, well, the history starts like just a few years after cinema was invented. So we had cinema in Iran right after its invention with all other countries. The prestigious like Iranian cinema started with the New Wave in the 70s when like some young filmmakers, educated ones, some of them learned filmmaking outside of Iran, started to make films that were like closer to art cinema. They went to the festivals, they won awards, and they were like intellectually appealing and also appealing to the audience as well. So they continued filmmaking, and also generations after generations, they trained new filmmakers. Their assistants started to make films. New filmmakers started to make films. But I would say that like the prestigious Iranian cinema really starts after the revolution. Especially the 90s was the golden era in Iranian cinema, when like every year the films were getting out of Iran, going to Cannes, Venice, Berlin, and they were like winning so many awards every year. So both the prestige that came to Iran and kind of like exposing the world to the culture, and also the kind of enthusiasm that is in Iran towards cinema and storytelling in general, that we've had like thousands of years of storytelling traditions in different mediums, from literature to theater and other things. They actually made everyone enthusiastic about cinema. So many people go to theaters, and we have like a lot of film schools, books, journals, a lot of things. Cinema is a huge thing in Iran. So that's why, because it's a very diverse in terms of both production and the audience, it is alive. And the government, while it is putting censorship on Iranian cinema, but also they've been helpful in terms of like funding it at the same time.
We're talking with Hamid Reza Nasiri, director and programmer of the first ever Wisconsin Iranian Film Festival, which is going on now. And Hamid Reza, could you tell us about some of the films that are showing? One weekend is over already, but tell us about some of the highlights.
So last weekend, we showed The Salesman by Farhadi, the director of also A Separation and About Elite. And the film just won Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film. So the Marquee Theater in U.S. South was completely packed. That was amazing. And before that, we showed I'm Not Angry, which has been banned in Iran for 3 years because of the political aspects of the film. And that was also a huge turnout. More than half of the marquee, which has like more than 300 seats, was full. And on Sunday, we showed Kiarostami's last film and also a documentary about Kiarostami, which it was a good turnout too. This coming weekend, we are showing A Dragon Arrives, which is like mixed genre. It's kind of like crime thriller, surrealist, docu-fiction, noir, everything that you think of. Like, it's a crazy film, and it's super entertaining. And then after that, we are showing a U.S. premiere of the film Breath, This is also made by a female filmmaker, and it has an anti-war theme, but it's a film that you can watch with family because it's all shown. It's a fantasy, shown through the perspective of a little girl with her family, and she's just like putting herself instead of the protagonist of the books that she's reading. She loves reading books. And the family goes through the revolution and then the war in the 80s. It's a beautiful film, beautifully shot, and you can watch it with your family. It's a very entertaining film. On Sunday, our plan is to show Downpour, which is a 4K restoration of a classic film done by Martin Scorsese Foundation. We have to keep you posted on that. Recently, a problem came up with the DCP file that the distributor from Italy sent to us. We're working on it. We're working hard on it. Hopefully, we can fix it. So keep posted. You can check out our Facebook page and also our website to actually find out more about that.
Now, if people are out there listening, thinking, Iranian cinema, okay, I want to check it out, maybe can't make it to the festival itself, what are some good things that people could hunt for, maybe at their library, maybe through streaming, that might be a good entry point?
Well, if you're interested in Iranian cinema, there is kind of a Netflix of Iranian cinema called IMVBox. So IMVBox.com. There are many films that you can just watch for free, and there are many films that you can just like for, I think, $3 per month. That's the subscription. It's very cheap. You can watch the very recent films that just came out of theater, and also older movies. That's a great thing. There are also some things on Amazon Prime. There are some in Madison Public Library, in the 4-star, and
but if you can name a couple names of movies we should try to hunt down, whatever the source.
I would say check out Kiarostami's films, especially I would say Close Up. Through the Olive Trees is hard to find, but if you find it, that would be great. Anything you see from Kiarostami, that would be great. A Separation, which is has become the most iconic film in Iranian cinema now outside of Iran, especially in America. That's a great film to check out. There's also, I would say to also get a more, a closer picture of Iranian society, I would say check out more mainstream stuff, even comedies. And other things on, especially IMV Box, are available. Check out the comedies. I show some clips of Iranian comedies to a community in Washington County, and they were laughing and they were enjoying it. So I thought that's our comedy can also be shown outside of Iran. Why not be doing it? Why are we just showing an exotic picture of Iran? That's one of the things that I have tried to have in this programming, to not just show an exotic picture of Iran, but a picture that is kind of to see the similarities more than the differences between the people around the world.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. I just want to also mention that Middle Eastern Studies program at UW has also helped us in this, and we are still short in our budget. So if you can go to our website, wiiranianfilmfest.com, there's also a donate button there, and you can also find the schedule and information about the films too. I hope I see more people this weekend. We are going to show amazing films. Thank you for having me again.
That's Hamidrazza Nasri, director and programmer of the first annual, maybe there will be a second annual next year, Wisconsin Iranian Film Festival. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. 30 years ago today, The Simpsons made their debut on The Tracey Ullman Show. In honor of that milestone, we're taking your calls right now about your favorite animated film or TV show. It used to be cartoons were for kids on Saturday mornings, but now animated shows and movies are for everybody, including grown-ups.
And you can share your favorites right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Whether it's The Simpsons or not, do you have a favorite animated TV show or movie that you have loved to watch on your own with kids? And are these animated shows and movies not just for kids anymore? Are there ones that you love as a grown-up? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Rob, you were a huge Simpsons nerd back in the day. You still drop a Simpsons quote here and there in the office.
It's so locked into my brain. It's hard. And sometimes I think I'll make a joke and not even realize until a few minutes later that it was a Simpsons reference. It's so part of my vocabulary now. And I watched the first 12 or 13 seasons, and I kind of fizzled after that. Mm-hmm. And I occasionally peek back in. But, yeah, it used to be almost, that. And it was back when you watched TV when it was on. You can just bring it on any old time. You'd have to set aside the time and sit down at the TV.
And you have, to be fair, you've modeled yourself personally after Mr. Burns.
Mr. Burns, excellent. Yes, it is true. I have, not really, no.
Nah, just a little bit. Let's take a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ron is with us now in Delavan. Ron, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Great. I got to say, my favorite animated TV show, King of the Hill.
Yep.
what do you like about that one, Ron?
Oh, it's just the combination of people that are in it. One, there's so many things you can relate to between the father and the son there, and the father and the grandfather per se. It's crazy funny.
Pretty relatable for you, Ron, there. And that's what I haven't seen. I've come across it occasionally, but I haven't done the deep dive.
In my back when it was on the same night as The Simpsons and I was hardcore watching, I think they overlapped there. Yeah. And it was a different pace, too. A very different animated primetime show than The Simpsons, where there would be a good long stretch of the four guys sitting out by the fence saying, yep, and drinking their beer. And I like that. It slowed things down a little bit.
Nice. Well, thanks a lot for that call, Ron. Appreciate it.
We'll go next to Billy with us in Green Bay. Billy, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Great conversation.
What's your favorite?
Well, I honestly have several favorites. I'm a huge Cartoon Network fan as an adult, specifically Adult mm-hmm. Swim, and I've been watching loyally since 2001. But things like Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which really changed late-night talk show, honestly, for adults, and Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I know these are references that some people groan at, but I think the social commentary in a lot of these cartoons is profound. And even on, the daily shows on Cartoon Network, like Teen Titans Go, things like this.
Yeah, I like that one.
Pretty jokes for adults, as they do kids.
Yeah, are these ones, Billy, where, an adult and a kid can watch it, and both of them get something out of it, even if some of the references might be over somebody's head?
Absolutely. I would say the daytime TV on Cartoon Network is definitely a lot more geared like that. There's going to be kid-friendly jokes, adult jokes that kind of go over the kid's head. Things past 8 p.m. on Cartoon Network get a little more geared for the adult-type situations, but there are honestly scenarios there in which I can't wait to share with my future kids.
And Billy, do you like Steven Universe?
Oh, my God, the Crystal Gems.
I could
sing half the songs right now.
Right.
I'm embarrassed to admit it, but yeah, I absolutely love Steven.
My kids got me into that one. At first, I thought it was just too weird. I thought, this is too weird. I don't get it. And now I get it, and I like it. So get
profoundly,
another one.
Profound adult situations.
Mm-hmm. Right. For adults and kids both.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, Billy.
Thanks for the call. We are taking your calls with your favorite animated TV shows or movies, ones you love to watch, maybe even as a grown-up, whether it's made for kids or not. 800-642-1234. Heard from a couple of our colleagues mentioning movies. Dean Collenbeck from our Eau Claire Bureau says, Toy Story, top 10 list of films, period, not just animated films. Funny, touching, fun for the whole family, he says.
And Larry Mueller Show producer Jill Nadau says, my favorite animated movie is Over the Hedge. The talented voices in that movie are unbelievable, starting with William Shatner doing a parody of William Shatner. So there's another one, Over the Hedge from Chill.
Back to your calls now. Blake with us in Sun Prairie. Blake, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's your favorite?
My favorite is for adults only. It's Archer on FX.
That is one that, you know, I haven't watched, but so many people whose taste I respect say I should watch Archer. What's so great about it?
You gotta check it out. It's just, it's crass and rude and hilarious.
Well, you had me a crass, rude, and hilarious.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that, Blake. And we go next to Tammy in Appleton. Tammy, hi.
Hi. So I was calling to say that my favorite films are by Studio Ghibli. Specifically Hayao Miyazaki.
Yes.
As director. He has had some really spectacular ones, and as somebody who has kids, little girls, they have a very strong female lead that often exhibits a lot of bravery and courage, which is something that I know growing up myself, you never found at Disney.
Right. I think those movies are terrific, and I'm a huge fan of all of those. Tammy, Rob, have you seen any of those?
I haven't. Name a couple of names by this director.
Spirited Away is probably the top one, because it's one of the top 100 films of all time, is my understanding.
So good.
My kid's favorite is My Neighbor Totoro.
My Neighbor Totoro. Have you heard that one?
I haven't seen that. I've heard of these. I've not seen.
Yeah, Rob has some catching up to do.
Tammy,
thank you for that. And a great time to mention my favorite. Now, it's an anime, which I never thought I'd be an anime fan. It's Naruto, a story of villages of ninjas who are very, well, some of them are really evil. Some of them are very noble. And we have a clip here from Naruto.
Don't you get it? It doesn't matter how strong my opponent is. If he tears off my arms, I'll just kick him dead. If he tears off my legs, I'll bite him dead. If he tears off my head, I'll stare him dead. If he gouges out my eyes, I'll curse him dead. Even if I get chopped into pieces, I'm gonna beat Orochimaru and take my friend Sasuke back once and for all.
Naruto is really noble. That makes him sound super violent, but he's always standing up for people and defending the Leaf Village because that's his ninja way.
Well, this is weird because I've never heard you mention this show before. Naruto is... No, the joke there is that I daily get updates on Naruto. Back to our callers now. Favorite animated TV shows and movies of all time. We've got Beth online in Wausau. Beth, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you about one of my favorites. Kids and adults would enjoy watching it. It hasn't been on the air for a while, but I think you can find it. It's called Clone High, and a group of high school teens are products of a government experiment, and so they're cloned, and so teenagers Joan of Arc, Cleopatra, JFK, Gandhi, Abraham Lincoln are all teenagers in the same high school, and so their personalities come through in their teen adventures, and it's hilarious.
Wow, I love that concept. Where can one see that, Beth?
Well, I ended up looking on Amazon and bought it on DVD a few years ago because it wasn't on the air anymore. But I think if you do a search on YouTube or something, you can probably find some episodes. I'm not sure.
Great. Thanks for that recommendation. And let's go next quickly to Michael in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I love a lot of animated shows. I agree with a number of the previous callers about, like, Archer and Cartoon Network especially. But I think my all-time favorite animated show has to be Futurama.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually have tattoos of a number of the characters on my arm.
Nice.
For a movie, I think it's a tough choice, but I want to say Up.
Up. Okay, a Pixar movie. Carl Christensen, one of our producers here, picked Up as one of his favorites as well. And I watched a bunch of Zap Brannigan clips in preparation for this show from Futurama. So thank you so much for all of your calls. You can keep sharing, by the way, your favorite animated series of all time or movies, animated movies, at the Central Time Facebook page. Mark the anniversary of the debut of The Simpsons. It's National Garlic Day, a day we can get behind here at Central Time, though I haven't done anything to celebrate it so far today. I have not eaten, I think, anything at all with garlic so far. You?
I may have. I had some veggie cream cheese. I think there may have been garlic powder in it, but I invite you to do this. Have you ever imagined a cooking world without garlic?
My childhood. Yeah, we didn't. Garlic was not big, and it was not a thing in my family until more recently. So, no, I grew up without lots of garlic. And the first time I was with friends trying to cook something, and I held these garlic balls, like, what do I do with this? They kind of mocked me. But now I get it.
I had to teach my husband that you had to peel the garlic cloves. You didn't put the whole clove with all the paper on it into the dish. That was
papery.
A revelation. That was a long time ago, to be fair. He's a great cook. But, yeah, I love garlic.
Yeah, now I like it a lot now, and I cook with it. It's, I start a lot of dishes just dicing up some garlic and onions and sautéing those and then figure out what I'm going to make with it. And last year or the year before, I did fridge pickles, and I fridge pickled garlic. And pickled garlic is a whole different twist on the flavor.
Yummy.
I love cooking with that, too.
And I have a recipe for Mexican garlic soup that I like to make that has, I want to say, something like 20, 25 garlic cloves in it. And you dice them all.
Wow.
And it's not horrible. You know, garlic
it's
breath.
It's not overpowering.
It's not overpowering. It's just tasty.
Well, in honor of National Garlic Day, we've shared a recipe from a Food Friday we did with our own Lori Skelton. She pointed us toward a creamy garlic vinaigrette. Make that. Celebrate the day. This is Central Time.